Thank you. Okay, hello everybody, and welcome to this JIG Working Group call today on the 15th of February. On the call today we have Edmund Chung, Rafiq Tamakh, Fuad Batayne, Samad Hussain, Avery Doria, and Wendy Sao. And from staff we have Bart Boswinkel, Olaf Nordling, Christina Nordstrom, and Steve Chang.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, we have apologies from Jan. Otherwise, I have no apologies.
Okay. And, about Jen, my co-chair, she is in Hong Kong right now, actually, at the Apricot meetings and part of the activities with the APTLD workshop. So she won't be able to join us today. I want to start off by apologizing. Last week, the week before, in our last meeting, had a bit of a situation and wasn't able to join the call, and I think Jane was having some trouble as well, and we canceled the call at last minute. I really apologize for that. I guess we'll get the work back on track. Also, in the last couple of weeks, I've been preparing the Apricot meetings here in Hong Kong. For those of you who are coming, I hope you have a great stay here. But so that has been tying things down. But for today, I think one of the things that we want to get out of the way is the single character IDN-TLD final draft. I'd like to, I guess, as mentioned, start off by concluding the discussion on the staff response and the consolidated comments, and then move to a discussion. It seems like there isn't a lot to be discussed, but I think there are a couple of things that we probably want to cover in terms of how it should be, the final report for the different councils should be developed. So we'll start with that, and then I understand that Steve Sheng is here with us today, and he'll be able to provide us with some updates on the IDN variants issue with Tina leaving ICANN, which is old news now, and he'll be able to provide us some update there, and which will open our discussion on the variant issue. So, I guess...
Edmund, this is Bart.
Hi, Bart.
Just maybe a suggestion that this is more for Steve's convenience. So as he's only on the call for the update, maybe you could start with the update on, say, the board initiative and what is happening so he can leave the call. Otherwise, he has to stay on for the full hour almost.
Okay.
Is that okay with you, Steve? Because it's rather early for you as well, isn't it?
Oh, no worries. I have another call at 5 o'clock. But, yeah, that would be good.
Okay. So, I'd like to get the comments thing out of the way first, because I don't...
Okay.
I just want to get that cleared, and then we'll go to Steve if that's okay. Because I think in terms of the consolidated comments, it really is not... It has been circulated for some time now. I didn't see any particular issues with it. So I think, Bart, it is really clear for you to have it posted so that we wrap up the public comments period for the final report. Is
okay.
there anything you see, that we need to do further, or... if anybody on the call wants to bring up anything in terms of the consolidated comments from the staff, which is really just a summary report of the comments that we received.
No, I don't have anything to add, so I'll post it, and then the comments periods can be closed.
Sounds good.
Okay.
So, with that out of the way, we'll come back, as I guess Bart suggested, we'll come back to discussion about how we go about the final report. And before that, we'll get an update from Steve Sheng on the IDN variant issue. So, Steve?
Thank you, Edmund. So Tina left, but I want to start out saying that I am not taking on Tina's role. With that, I think Mayala is our IDM manager for managing ccTLD fast track applications. And for the variant project, I can take the project very seriously, even after Tina left. And so we have a small team formed. Let me give you the initial members of the team. We have Kim Davis, which is our ANA manager. We have Francisco, our registry liaison, Nayala, which are manager for the IDM Fast Track. We also have Bahara, our manager for regional relationships, and myself. So we have a small team formed. There are a couple of things we do. So for the Varian project, the background is the board in its Trondheim meeting in September direct the CEO to develop an issues report identifying what needs to be done with the evaluation, possible delegation, allocation, and the operation of ID and GTLD containing variant characters. So we are developing a plan for the issues report, and the plan is to conduct 5 case studies to study these study the variant issue, obviously language by language and kind of language script, like language by language, because before we're trying to arrive at the a universal solution and that hasn't yielded a successful conclusion. So the 5 cases that we are studying are Chinese, Arabic, Latin, Indic, and Cyrillic. So within each of these studies, we want to investigate a set of issues that needs to be resolved to facilitate a good user's experience for the IDM variant TLDs. And from the 5 case studies and issues report will be created. Now, as you might heard in Cartagena, and I assume many of you have worked on the IDM variant issue for a long time. This is a complex issue, and the ICANN staff is really looking for the community to drive this project. So, what do I mean by that? Within each case, we're going to form a study team that composed of, for example, community representatives, linguistic expertise, DNS expertise, and also since the variant issue touches on the registry operation, so we're going to have a community expertise on registry operation and finally on policy. So we're going to try to form a case study team for each script, and just study a set of the issues that come up. And after that, at the end, we will put all the issues together and do the issues report. That's what I have so far. Do I have any questions?
This is Edmund. I wonder if there is at least a conceptual time frame for how this you see this pan out.
Yes. So we are under the plan that by next week, a report will be a draft proposal will be published for a public comment. The timeline is trying to form the study teams by April, and the we hope to have the case studies completed by September of this year, and the issues report no later by the Africa meeting, I think, of this year. So that's the tentative timeline that I have, subject to public consultation.
Okay. Does anyone else have any question? If not, I have a second question. Okay. And the second question is, in terms of the study teams, how do you envision those being formed?
How do I envision those formed? I'm not sure I understand your question.
So how would you pull in the people? Is it going to be basically staff nominated? Will you be calling for GNSO participation, CCNSO participation, ALAC-GAC participation kind of thing? Or how do you envision the constitution of those teams?
That is a good and very important detail that, you know, has to be worked out. Right now, my understanding is the board is going to have a variant group, and they're going to give some guidance on how that's to be done. Currently, if you have, I think currently is, you know, the staff started to gather names for the people that that we know from the past have engaged on this issue, and you know we have to gather for this for every script. You know, obviously we're looking for experts, and if you have some names or you want to join the project, you know, send me an email and I'll forward it along to the working team.
Okay, cool. I seem to have all the questions. I wonder if anyone else have a question before I ask the third one. Okay.
This is a very verbal introduction. We'll get you a copy of the draft report for your comment shortly. We're finalizing the report, the draft proposal, I'll say.
Steve, this is
Brian.
Go ahead. Just regarding your last remark, Steve, you can send it to me and I will forward it to the group.
Okay, sure. I will do that.
Okay, so my sort of third question is, at this point, how do you see us sort of this group working in parallel with the studies and work there? We had a very brief discussion with Tina in Cartagena. But I'd like to get a sense from you and the new team, I guess, how you see the continued interaction.
So that's an excellent question. That's a question that, you know, I myself have been thinking very hard. So I'm very glad to ask that question. I would welcome, you know, the your thoughts on the role of the JIG's working group. So there are two things. One thing is, there are various initiatives everywhere working on variants. You know, there's the JIG working group. There's some language-specific initiatives. And there's, obviously IETF work. One thing the past has told us, if not anything, is the group, works a lot of information, but the information needs to be shared. So one thing we want to do is at least to facilitate the sharing of the information. That said, I thought about this issue, but I haven't crystallized my idea yet. So I really welcome your suggestion and the group's suggestion on how to interact with these case study teams and the issues project. Perhaps when we have the report, when you have the report in your hand, the proposals and maybe you can think more and provide more input to us. That would be greatly appreciated. Because JIG working group, we think is the working group that works on these issues within ICANN. So.
Yeah, I think that's great, and I truly appreciate the interaction and the interest to continue it. And we look forward to the document. As a starter, if you're not already on the mailing list, it would be nice if you are on. And as we get along with the discussions and documents come out, if you can take a look and provide your thoughts on how they intertwine with the work with the two bodies of work. We have our in-house intelligence into the IETF work from Avery. I'll volunteer to do that at this point. And I know that in terms of the documents, Suzanne Wolf is also a quiet follower of some of the documents that we're creating. So we do. I do understand that's very important, and that's definitely an area that we need to keep up. So, speaking of, if you can be on the mailing list, and more often if possible, to be on the call, and if this time becomes really tough, perhaps it's time we consider adjusting the time for this call as well. So, because I think your participation as
Hello?
We discuss the idea and variant issue will be
Hello?
Will be important.
Hello.
Yeah. Hello. Steve, did you want to add anything?
This is Avery. Can I add a belated question?
Please.
I'm slow this morning, and I apologize. And it may have been covered while my attention.
No worries. And maybe I'm just pushing too fast.
No. You gave me plenty of time, but I just couldn't think that fast. with this report coming out in September, and I guess the most hopeful and optimistic of us thinking that September may end up a starting date for new GTLD applications in the best of all possible worlds. How, and this maybe is not a question so much for Steve as for Olaf, who I understand is also on the call, how does this dovetail and fit in with any GTLD application realities?
Sorry, I almost dropped out, but I'm back on.
Okay, should I repeat my question?
So every why don't you repeat it?
Okay, yeah, I was asking, with the report, intent, and again, apologies for last-minute questions. With the report coming out in September, with the most hopeful of us hoping that new GTLDs could still start up around September timeframe, that looks like the earliest possible at this point. Maybe it could even be earlier. how does this work and the new GTLD application launch fit with each other? And as I was saying, maybe this was as much a question for Olaf as it was for you, Steve, but I'm just wondering how that's being dealt with, and this may have already been covered, and if it was, I apologize for having lost it. Thank you.
Thank you, Avery. If I understand correctly, your question is, how does this work fit in the time frame for the new GTLD program? Is that the question?
That's a big part of it. The other part of it is, assuming this work is not, you know, that's the question. Never mind.
So right now the applicant guidebook it says applicants applying for strings that can indicate the variant, and the variant will be evaluated. The strings will be evaluated, and will be allocated, but will not be delegated. So that's what the new GLDs in the guidebook that's regarding IDM variants. I would say that will not change until the issues project make otherwise different recommendations.
Does that answer your question? Actually, I guess adding to that, there's another piece of information. I think in terms of the process, it's the as the new GTLD comes in, you can apply for IDNs, and you can also apply for those with variants. And it's at this point, as far as the applicant guidebook for the latest version is concerned, the variants are going to be held. Reserved in a way. And when a policy for delegating them exists, which is what this whole exercise, I think, ultimately wants to lead to, then that will kick in. And I think it gives us probably another 4 to 6 months for all the evaluation, the contract, and even 4 or 6 months or 9 months or a little bit longer before we actually see them being delegated. And hopefully, I think, with the big H, that will be closer than on this process, so that we'll, by the time the actual CLD gets delegated, will be much closer to or even there in terms of the variance.
I have another question. This issues process does not in any sense include reviewing what is a variant. We all have that is already codified, so that when people are applying and they're calling something a variant, we have no doubts as to what is and what isn't one.
I think Steve probably can answer that. I'd like to probably add a little bit as well. Steve?
So, I guess one of the goals for the issues report is to create a commonly understood glossary of terms and to ensure that such terms are accurately and really vetted with the appropriate technical and linguistic communities. And I think determining what is and what is not a variant is within the scope for the issues report. But obviously, some communities have moved, along, have a good definition of variant, and then for those communities, that task will be really easy. Just cite the relevant documents. What is a variant? But in other communities, the issue may not be so well defined. But we do think you know, create a commonly understood glossary of terms is very important, and understanding, you know, the issues that are very important.
Right, and I guess adding to that as well, I think if we recall, I know it's been some time since we've first discussed this, but in the draft documents that we have here, we also wanted to touch on this issue on a more techno-policy end, and I think that's really where the biggest overlap is going to be in terms of the issues report and what this group is doing. And I think we when we discussed it, we tried to take on an approach which is more techno-policy implementation kind of view, world view of what a variance is, rather than a sort of language-specific view, if you will. I think that's Avery, what you mentioned is at the heart of the issue, definitely that's something we need to figure out. And once we have a definition of which, and to me, I think the most important thing is to determine. It really doesn't matter, you know, whether something is a variant or not. It could be different cultures define different things, but at the end of the day, it really boils down to what is automatically delegated and what requires additional steps to be delegated and what doesn't get delegated and is only reserved. I think in terms of policy, that's the ultimate goal, is to create those few sets. And I guess our goal is that once those, at least the way I see it right now, is that once once the linguistic communities decide, you know, those three sets, then it can follow whatever the implementation policy should follow, and that's where I think the JIG, what we are producing, will try to, or at least that in my hope right now, that's what we're trying to achieve.
Thanks. If I can comment, I think what is sort of giving me pause, or what I'm having trouble, you know, reconciling, is sort of the chicken and egg problem we hopefully have. Of course, it's possible we won't have it. But is that basically what we're saying is, for the new GTLD process, what is a variant is pretty much up to the applicant. And because we sort of, and then I'm saying, but in that case, I'm not really sure how, unless this is terminated in time, as you say, an extra 4 months here, an extra 4 months there, you know, we may have our definitions. On what predictable basis, then, those who are going to do said allocations or reservations or what have you, make their decisions? And I'm not really looking for an answer at this point, because I think I understand where we're at. I'm just saying that seems to me to be sort of a fuzzy space at the moment, in terms of if I can apply for a variant, but there's no defined, you know, strict codified definition of variant, and somebody is going to adjudicate my application for a variant based upon, you know, something that is not yet in existence, there is a space for discomfort at the very least. And that's
no,
why
I completely agree with what you're saying, and I think you're right on, is that right now the process is that the applicant, we, I guess, quote-unquote, trust the applicant to provide it, and the contention sets are going to be based on those. And I guess what you know, one of the, I guess, abusive way to do it is that, you know, to cover everything and say these are variants, okay, you later will have to figure it out with your IDM policies, but now I'm going to put everything under the sun as variants, and, you know, now everyone is in contention with me, right? That's
I didn't even go that far, but yeah.
I mean, yeah, this, that's the abuse way. But, yeah, that I guess, is a potential issue. But at this point, that is the, as far as I can see, that's so far the process. And hopefully we'll find a solution, and hopefully applicants will be behaving themselves, for lack of a better way to describe it.
Well, I wasn't just thinking of the applicant's misbehavior, and I guess I don't immediately go there, which is probably a deficiency in me after 6 years in ICANN. But more I was thinking of the requirement in GTLD that the processes be objective and known up front, and that here we basically have to accept the notion that they're not quite.
So there are currently some working definitions. I mean, there's no universally accepted definition of what is a variant. You know, in drafting this report, you know, that's one of the things that you know, we're aware. And so there are definitions. For example, the RSC 3747, and I think that definition is also used by the IDN implementation team. So those are the starting definitions we use in this report. So you know, there's no universally accepted definition, but you know, from a starting point, you know, we do start from somewhere, and so that's where we start, the two definitions I mentioned. With regards to you know, different applicants, you know, applying and trying to game the system, I mean, those are real possibilities that we have to think of. Right now, the policy is, you know, each registry or applicant submit their own language tables. So one way, you know, they could game the system is by, you know, adding things in the language table. And maybe that's one of the issues that needs to come out from the issue report.
Edmund, this is Bart. May I make a procedural suggestion that we continue this discussion in 2 weeks when the report is available as well, in a week, because then there is, I think, a more in-depth discussion possible when everybody has the report in front of him or her.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. But before I close this, I'd like to ask if anybody else have any questions. Hearing none, I guess I thank Steve for making the presentation and updating us, and thank you, actually, Bart, for interjecting here. I think it's a natural wrap on this particular subject here.
Yeah,
and so we can come back to, hopefully in 15 to 20 minutes, about our work on this issue. But right now I'd like to move to looking at how we want to complete our work with the single character IDN TLD.
Okay, thank you.
So,
okay, thanks, Steve.
Thanks, I'm going to jog off now.
All right, thanks, Steve. Bye. So, in terms of single character, I think at least a pretty clear next step is to try to produce a final report based on the comments received. From what I see, and from the consolidated report, I think we're pretty close. It seems that most of the issues that were brought up, we have in one way or the other. Addressed. I really don't see any particular new issue that was brought up that we have not covered. So I think the first step is probably to integrate this summary report into the final report as one additional section that, you know, we've taken this into consideration, and these are the comments that we received, and to eventually compile a final report that will be presented to the respective councils. So, does that make sense for people? There is one issue that I think is outstanding that I want to spend about the next little while talking about, which is the issue raised by Olaf, actually, about how to implement this. But other than that, I think most of the items that were raised in the comments seem to, in fact, confirm that we have covered the stuff that we need to. What do people think about that? Any thoughts, questions? Because I think what I'm trying to suggest here is that we take proceed in a manner where we would try to edit the final report and then present it to the respective councils. That is the suggestion for the next step. Okay, so I'm hearing no particular concerns with it. I come back to one of the, key thing that I want to talk about in terms of editing the final report, which follows the discussion we had, a few meetings back, especially with Olaf, in terms of the implementability, I don't know whether this is a real word, but implementability of what we are suggesting. And Olaf specifically mentioned that in the current, not so much actually for the IDN CCTLDs, but for the IDN GTLDs, there is a situation whereby the initial evaluation does not provide a way for an evaluation on confusability caused by anything else than visual confusion. So I understand that Avery did make a argument that anything could be visual in a way, and if we talk about keyboards, because we might be seeing it differently because we didn't see it right. But I think that's probably we probably need a better argument. And so I sort of open this question and see if we want to try to tackle this and make some edits in a way such that it could be something that is implementable. Because what we have suggested right now, I think the key point is that what we've suggested right now is that for the GTLD process to take into consideration other technical aspects of confusability, such as keyboard layouts. And that seems to be going to be a challenge for the new GTLD process. Does anyone have any...
I have one thing I want to add. I did not say that anything could
be
visual, and I wouldn't want to be left on record as saying that anything could be spread. I was thinking that again, the edges of what is and what isn't might be a little fuzzier than we think, and that possibly, some keyboard issues or others might enter the issue that it is more complicated than it appears on first viewing. I certainly do not mean to say that anything could be defined as visual.
Avery, I apologize. I was playing with it a little bit.
You were just testing to see if I was listening.
I apologize for mischaracterizing it. But I think here's, I guess I'd like to throw out an idea. And the basic idea is really that we probably should, just looking back at the new utility process, because it, unlike this IDNC CTLD process, which does have a more thorough technical evaluation in terms of string at earlier points, I think what we can do is that we can suggest that this is part of the technical evaluation, and that the remaining issues could be dealt with in terms of the objection process, because, you know, if it's, you know, it's no different than a typo squat issue that we are trying to describe, but it is just more amplified in our situation. So after thinking about Olaf's discussion previously, my inclination is to keep sort of the general approach, but in terms of specific suggestion to input into the technical evaluation and the objection process, that this is, you know, a typo squat is a you know, a potential way to suggest that a typo squat would be a potential thing to consider in terms of the confusability. Objection process. That's the idea. I don't know if people have any thoughts, feedback, support. I think it's totally wild.
And I seem to be talking almost as much as ever. I think that definitely would work. I think the only thing that needs to be defined by those, again, looking at the objections, is whether we want to make that a consideration that they can, you know, in giving them guidance, do we give them guidance that says, and, you know, I have trouble calling it the typo squat because, again, we're doing it from the malicious angle as opposed to just the pure confusability angle. But the typo confusion, perhaps, is something that they can consider in the objection process. And I'm not quite sure, indeed, how all the guidance to objection panels is being made and where all of that is being reviewed. But indeed, I think you're right. I don't think we have to burden the technical process with it. One of the intents of the GNSO and you know, I assume it's still going on in the CCNSO, is that the rules that can't be defined, you know, within the GNSO, if we can't define it strictly because it's not practical or because we don't know, that's where the objection process comes in. So the solution seems good, but what it does is it moves the problem to the guidance that is given to the objection panels, and I admit that I don't quite understand how that guidance is given and to what degree that guidance is both public and reviewed and transparent and all that good stuff, because I don't think I've seen the drafts of guidance to objection councils or objection committees or whatever they're properly called. Thanks.
Right. Well, I guess with that, I'd like to see if I can venture to ask Olaf. I understand you probably don't have the answer right now, but I'd like to broach the question is, we had this discussion a few meetings back, and if this is a suggestion, what do you think about that? And also, Avery's question about whether you can enlighten us on, in terms of the objection process, how do we provide some input to the guidance of that objection process, and when or how, where will we eventually see that happen?
First of all, yep, there are two comments, because one should remember that if we take the objection of confusability, of string similarity objection, as it goes. Well, standing to object will have an existing top-level domain operator or somebody representing him or her. It limits the applicability as it's written right now of the string similarity objection to take care of what you want to take care of. Because this will be, it limits. Secondly, well, since in this particular case it's a WIPO that has been appointed, and of course they will draw on a huge experience in second-level domain rulings about string similarity. So that's the main advice, rather, that's the main competence that they do have. Whether there will be any more detailed guidance to that particular panel is beyond me, actually. I don't know if that's there are any plans to that effect.
Olaf, a quick question.
Avery, please go ahead.
It could just be that they'll be given the guidebook and said, read this and make it consistent?
Well, yes, they will most certainly have access to the guidebook, but it's I think it's a bit the other way around. That they've been selected because they have this particular expertise in the application of the notion of confusing similarity. So that from that perspective, I'm just saying that there may be additional advice, perhaps, of the nature you mentioned, that can be provided to them, but it's I'm unaware of any such plans. Let's put it like that.
Okay, so we're not giving them any constraints on the definition. It's up to them. It's WIPO, we trust you. You figure it out and let us know.
That's, at least, not being really very much into the loop on the objection process, or more in-depth in involved in that, and not being in discussion or having been in discussion with the particular panel provider here on this, I can only tell you that I'm not aware of any particular additional guidance that will be given beyond, of course, obviously, the applicant guidebook.
Okay. No, I think that's good feedback. There's I want to go back to your point one. You mentioned that it depends on a existing TLD holder, or actually not only that, but also an applicant as well. So I do think actually it does cover what we want to avoid, because ultimately a quote unquote, better word, I'm using typo squad again. So it's a typo confusability. It only affects the situation if there is something to be, confused with, and you if you mistype something that it would get somewhere. If it doesn't, if that ultimate place doesn't exist. It's a not found in NX domain, and so nobody's harmed in a way. So I think ultimately it is exactly the type of protection that we needed in place. It's no different than 2, 3, 4 character domains. Whereas, if we want to cover everything, of course, then it doesn't. But the ultimate test is really if it ends up going somewhere else that it shouldn't be. So, I don't know.
I just wanted to highlight that those who have standing to object, to file an objection, are
right.
Those with a top-level domain.
Right, and as we progress, I mean, there will be more and more, and there, and in the first round, I think the applicants also have the ability to do that, right?
That's not as it's written right now.
So what happens if the applicants feel that it is, but it's not identified as a contention set?
That's where they don't have a standing as it's written right now.
That's interesting. So, I just wanted to highlight it
if that's what you want to achieve.
Sure.
But this
seems to be something that is beyond what this group is talking about. This is a situation where if for whatever reason, two applications are not identified as contention sets. Neither of them can raise, if they themselves feel that they are in conflict, neither of them would be able to raise an objection. Is that the case?
Let's read it again and see so that I'm not reflecting some older version on this particular, but that's how it's been for quite some time. Of course, they can lodge other objections, like community objections against each other and such. That's perfectly doable. But in the case of confusing similarity or similarity, string similarity, I have to look it up, really, but just to say that, okay, the final version is exactly like this, but I believe it to be the case.
Okay, it will be useful to if you can. I think it is definitely related to what we're talking about here, and it probably has a bigger implication because this seems to be something that could be of interest for other cases as well.
I'll double check. I could almost do it immediately now, but all right.
No, take a few
minutes left.
I think we're.
I'll get back to you on it.
That would be great. Please, just send it to the mailing list, and we'll follow up from there. We're almost at the top of the hour. I think in terms of the single character IDN PLD, my suggestion is to go ahead with producing the final report by incorporating the consolidated comments and by making this adjustment to the suggestion rather than for the initial evaluation of string confusability to push it to the objection process and the technical evaluation process itself. So I guess in terms of this one, if people feel that this is an approach that makes sense, then I'll produce a next draft in this direction.
Can I intercede just quickly?
Please.
The book does say it's subject to objection by an existing TLD operator or by another GTLD applicant in the current application round.
That's what I found as well. So sorry for confusing everything,
but it's
wider than I said earlier. So it's that constraint doesn't exist. So thanks for sorting it out. I was you beat me by 5 seconds to it, Avery.
That's because you were talking and I was looking.
That is good. Then I think it seems like we have a. Pretty good approach in that, and I guess I look forward to wrapping this up. Anyone else have any comments before I move on to the next topic, which I'll spend 2 minutes on? Hearing none. So I'll come up with a draft for the final. Report on the single character. I'll use the next 2 minutes to talk a little bit because we've left the IDN variant item off for quite a long time. I'm pretty glad to have Steve on the call today and have a better vision of what's going to happen. I think in terms of our document, I have it in front of me. That's why I have the benefit there. If you have, so that would be great too. But we identified five areas of policy aspects originally. Number one was what was considered ID invariant. Number two is the types of ID invariants for with respect to the allocation and delegation policies properties. Number three is the policy policy for number two, essentially. So what happens next? And then number four was requirements for zones managed by a TLD operator off of an ID invariant TLD. And then number five was adding ID invariant TLDs. So out of the five, it seems that based on the studies, number one is something that we might want to reconsider and perhaps even remove and say, you know, this is, not entirely remove, but we remove a lot of the discussion and leave it open because it's a lot more language dependent on what would be considered an ID invariant. And move or merge that discussion into the studies from staff and board, and concentrate on number two, three, and four, and five, and which is, you know, once it is a variant, and we can sort of identify the groups of or the types of variants that in terms of their delegation and allocation properties. Then we can work on those. You know, that would be a policies that I think this group would be best positioned to tackle. And then so we can do this in parallel.
Edmund, this is Bart again.
Yes,
may I suggest that, say, for the next call, we recirculate the last version of the ID invariant document again to the whole group, so everybody got the latest version. We ensure this, and at the same time, hopefully, I'll get a copy from the project plan so we can really see what needs to happen. So it's the next call is purely about ID invariants.
Good. I think. That's thank you for the suggestion. I would add one thing to it. I can't promise, but I'll try. What I'll try to do is exactly what I suggested just now, is to pull out some of the things from number one, which is to sort of define what an ID invariant is, and produce a document, you know, so that people can compare what we had before and sort of what
I'm
suggesting. And then
because I think what is say from say in order to move forward, I think one of the decisions in front of this working group is how to interact, if interact at all, with this IDN variant project. That probably that's the first decision you want to make before to go into too many details.
Yeah, I think that's precisely what I wanted to suggest, and I just went about it in a more convoluted way. Thank you for crystallizing it for me. So, does anyone have any questions, thoughts before we close? And in terms of what we just said. Okay. Hearing none, then, as mentioned, I guess next week we'll have a couple more drafts, one on the final report, not next week, the week after, 2 weeks from now. The two documents, hopefully I'll work my best to produce them. And that will be the meeting, the final meeting before San Francisco. And so next week, the next meeting, 2 weeks from now, we'll talk about those two documents and our work in San Francisco. So I guess that is that wraps up today's session. Thank you, everyone, for joining and thank you for your time. I think we had a really constructive meeting today.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.